Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed, and it is time for Author of the Week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone, who has always been so kind and generous to sponsor our Author of the Week. We've been doing this well over a decade. In fact, they've been doing it longer than I have even been here, which is 12 and a half years. You go in ABC Books, you'll see the physical Author of the Week section there. Also, we have the digital version at ksgf.com. You can go and listen to past Author of the Week books. Great resource for you as you finish up one and looking for another. Our author this week is Marine veteran Stuart Scheller. His book is Crisis of Command, How We Lost Trust and Confidence in America's Generals and Politicians. And offhand, some of you may not remember his name, though we did talk about him, as did so many others in media, when he created a video that would land him fired and jailed after calling for accountability for military leaders because of the way that the Afghanistan withdrawal took place. I want to thank you for being with us. And I remember when that happened, and I remember a lot of people that are, I think, consider themselves to be very pro-military, at the same time really agreed with your sentiment. And there was this sort of sense I got, anyhow, with a lot of people in the public, like, oh man, what's going to happen next? I'm really with this guy, but I'm a little worried for him. What prompted you to take that route you did, and did it all play out the way that you thought it would?
First of all, I appreciate you having me on the show and the opportunity to speak to your listeners. But, you know, when I first made that video, I didn't plan on making any other statements. And I just wanted to make a statement that said, we need timely assessment of failure. I knew, because I had been in for 17 years, that our senior leaders would deflect. The military has gotten very good at weaponizing the media, and that we would call it a success. And I watched real time just terrible decisions that were made. And so when I made the first video, it was simply supposed to be just that. I understood when I made it, if you go back and watch it, that I was risking my job and my retirement. But, you know, I thought it was important enough. I thought the gain outweighed the cost. But once I made the video and I was relieved immediately and then bullied and I felt trying to be silenced and marginalized, I had a choice. I had a choice where I could remain silent and apologize and take my beating, or I could continue to make statements and force the issue a little bit. And so I chose the second route, obviously, and then it escalated very quickly. And you know how you opened, people were like, oh my gosh, what's happening?
Right.
But that was all by design. I mean, I would have, if I could go back, there's always ways you could do it better, but no one does it perfect. And it was also a very emotional and stressful time for me. I mean, my whole world was getting flipped upside down. So I tried to stay true to my message, and I feel like I came out of it, you know, stronger. And so what was really tough when I got out of jail was I was still under a gag order, and I stopped making statements after I got out of jail because the return on investment just wasn't there for further statements. I'd have gone to jail for years and would have got a dishonorable discharge. But the point I'm trying to make is from October to Christmas Eve when I got out, and everyone had opinions about me, and I legally couldn't respond to any of them. And so when I got out, I went through the media, you know, did a bunch of network shows, big podcasts, stuff like that. And then I wanted to write the book because I wanted people to understand the decisions that I made. And most importantly, I wanted Americans to understand the systemic issues that exist in the military. The military system has drifted, and it's really important for our way of life and our foreign diplomacy approach to understand. And right now, I think there's just a misunderstanding of the deep issues. And so I was able to take my personal story that's very emotional, raw, and real, but then throughout it, show the macro systemic issues that really bring an understanding for the American people.
I think some of them are obvious to outside observers. And just one of my fears, I'm not somebody who is military. I've not been military, though I have family that is currently and has served. But I do think just, you know, perception is also a component of military strength. And one of the things that really concerned me is that this occurred. And it was, I would like to think it was done in a way that would be considered unacceptable for, you know, in terms of an outcome through, you know, the use of military, yet no one was held accountable. And what my fear was is that this would send a message to our enemies that we can currently at this given point in time, we can have such a complete and absolute disaster, but just sort of shrug our shoulders about it, and there's no expectation of higher standards. Is that reading too much into it, or is that?
No, I mean, I think the reality of the situation today has confirmed your assumptions. Military might is only as good as a deterrent as what people believe. That's what it comes down to. So if people believe you have a superior military and that you credibly may use that military to influence a situation, then that is effective. I mean, look at the first Desert Shield, Desert Storm. We went in there and we were very successful, but quite honestly, that whole operation could have been avoided had President Bush clearly signaled if Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait, we would use military force. Saddam Hussein, when questioned about it later, truly didn't believe that the United States would respond with military force, right? So how you project and influence the minds of people is very relevant. And the reality of the situation today with Russia, what it's doing in Ukraine, China emboldened with Taiwan, is a direct result of the perception of a weakened American military power based on the decisions that were made in the Afghanistan evacuation.
Everyone views themselves differently, and I think most people view themselves to some degree through rose-colored glasses. But I think about some of the top individuals in the military that even if it wasn't, because there was this big back and forth, you know, where you got this sense that Biden was saying, hey, everybody told me this is what I should do. I just listened to all my generals. And then on the other hand, you sometimes in testimony, you kind of got the sense they're like, no, we warned that this wouldn't be that great. And while there appear to be some finger pointing, I guess in my mind, I wished that we would have somebody in the military, even if they had been told, this is what you're going to do, and they were against it privately, that they would have resigned, if anything, to try and salvage some of the reputation of our military as an acknowledgement that this is not up to standards for us. And so I guess my question is recognizing that aside from no one losing their job, no one feeling as if the performance would warrant a resignation, even if for the sake of appearance and unacceptance of those sort of outcomes, it makes me wonder what motivates these people.
Well, 100%. That was actually the whole point of my first video, was why didn't anyone throw their rank on the table and say, hey, it's a bad idea to leave Bagram Air Base before we evacuate American citizens. And by saying throw the rank on the table, that's what I'm saying. You should go public. You should resign. And there are historical case studies of that happening. If you go back and look at Carter's presidency, which there's a lot of similarities between Carter and Biden, Carter wanted to pull all American military forces out of Korea. And there was a World War II general named Singlob who commanded the military forces, American military forces in Korea. And he went to Carter privately and said, if you pull military forces out of Korea, the North and the South will go to war, and that whole Korean War we had, it will be for nothing, and you will invalidate all the sacrifices of the service members. And Carter said, I heard you out, but I'm still going to do it. And then Singlob went public, and he resigned and said, this is a terrible idea, and through public pressure was able to change the course of events. And so we just don't have generals like that anymore, and I completely agree with you that they should have gone public if they actually disagreed. But here's the other catch of it. When they chose not to do that, then they assumed the restraints that President Biden had imposed upon them. So if you're not courageous enough to publicly resign because you think it's a bad idea, then once the plan fails, you don't get to say, well, no, we advised against it and it was a bad idea. Like, no, you're at fault. You're accountable because you assumed the restraints and you didn't resign. And so now, as the military professional, once you have failed, that is on you.
We are talking with Stuart Scheller, our author of the week. He's the lieutenant colonel who was fired and jailed after calling for accountability from military leaders for the Afghanistan withdrawal. His book is Crisis of Command, How We Lost Trust and Confidence in America's Generals and Politicians. To me, again, as an outside observer, I worry gravely, not just about that incident and what that meant and what caused that withdrawal and the way that it panned out, but some of the things that we're hearing about. It just appears to me that what we have is almost a retraining or an attempt to retrain young Americans that get into the military, that the real enemy is within us, that this this segment of our population, our brothers, our sisters, our fellow churchgoers, the people we work with, you know, if they have this tattoo, they're a potential domestic terrorist. If they read a lot about the Constitution, and it just seems like the focus, it's not so much that it's not where it should be, but it's sometimes where it absolutely shouldn't be. Is that something that I'm also way off base on, or is there some reason for concern there as well?
I list in the book, so to your point, I've read the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence a bunch of times, and in my letter of reprimand, they told me that I had violated my solemn oath, and I know my oath backwards and forwards, and so that was really concerning to me because, you know, we can have an academic conversation about whether I violated my oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. I would submit that I upheld it more so than all the officers who didn't do what I did. But to give you another example, in one of my posts, I quoted the Declaration of Independence. Mm-hmm. And I said that the power of the government comes from the people. And when the government no longer serves the interests of the people, it's the people's obligation to throw off that old form of government. And when I posted that, people were calling me a violent extremist. And, you know, the Declaration of Independence is literally our foundational document of government. And so just like quoting that in this hyper-polarized, name-calling society that we find ourselves in, it's very dangerous. And so that's why I wanted to tell the story, because I think people need to understand the problems that are inherent in the military. And saying that the military is apolitical, which I really wish it was. Everything I did, I thought was apolitical. But the truth is, military policy serves the interest of politics. They can't be separated. And when you have people-pleasing commanders, they very easily acquiesce to the desires of politicians. And that matriculates down to the junior service members. And so, you know, part of it is societal. Part of it is the military not protecting the core capabilities of the institution, which should be warfighting. And, you know, the other part of it is just like you framed in the question, everyone is an extremist nowadays, even if you quote the Declaration of Independence.
So is there hope? What needs to be done if there's a magic wand or a magic formula here in order to get us back on the right track with our U.S. military and to restore that trust and confidence in our generals and politicians? What needs to happen?
For the military, I outline probably five or six key things that need to be done now. And I think it would require a Secretary of Defense with some courage. You know, there's a historical example of a guy named Marshall who came in the Secretary of the Army after World War I and fired all the old bureaucratic generals, and that's what led to Eisenhower's ascension. I mean, something similar needs to happen, but more so than just that, getting rid of these old-style thinking people, these people-pleasing commanders, there also needs to be fundamental changes just to the way everything that they do. So another big one is in the military, to be promoted as an officer, it's a subjective evaluation. And what that means is if I'm a commander, I rank my subordinates 1 through 5 based on my thinking of who's the best. And so people in a military career figure out it's not necessarily about being the best performer, it's about your boss liking you the most. And so that has long-term consequences for people that are in for 40 years, which is what a 4-star general is. And another thing that I think we need to do is we need to sever the tie of pleasing a boss and make it more performance-based. So if I'm an infantry officer, I compete against another infantry officer in a warfighting scenario, and the winner gets preferential treatment to promotion. You could apply that to anything. F-15 pilots go against each other. The best F-15 pilot gets promoted by the F-15 pilot that impresses his squadron commander the most. And, you know, I, in the book, lay out 4 or 5 other things, but most of that is based on my assessment of the military foundation. Politics is something I think a little bit different and not necessarily completely explored in the book, but in my, what I'm doing in my life is I think in politics, we need more courage, and that it comes down to that. Maybe that's overly simplistic, but I'll give an example. In my book, I tell the story about how I violated the gag order at one point, baiting my command to send me to jail. And they did. And I did it very calculated. I did that on a Friday knowing they would send me to jail on a Monday. And I knew that the generals were testifying to Congress on a Tuesday, Wednesday, respectively. And so I thought if I got put in jail, it would illustrate hypocrisy and the Congress would then have leverage to demand accountability. And it did work in a sense. They all asked about me and the generals had to respond. But at the same time, I think I overestimated Congress's ability to influence change because they went through sound bites of anger, but then nothing happened.
Yeah.
And concurrently, not in the news, they approved a $750 billion annual DOD budget. And it's like, not one of you said, hey, you know, our leverage of control over the DOD is the budget. You know, these congressional panels where we act angry doesn't do anything. So if you want $750 billion DOD, tell me five names of people who made mistakes, or I'm going to take $80 billion off the top because that's what you left in Afghanistan. And none of them did that because, in my opinion, there was risk for the media to spin that as anti-military, standing against veterans, and it just lacked courage. So I think we need more courage in politics on both sides of the aisle. And, you know, I think the book does a good job of laying a lot of those things out.
Final question. Just curious, when this happened to you, I'm always interested in what happens behind the scenes. I mean, were you getting any sort of quiet thumbs up? Hey, we agree with you, but, you know, you're on your own here. Or what, were you completely cut off from any sort of support? What was that like? Just in terms of, like, emotional support, if you will, or encouragement?
No, from my senior military leaders, I was completely cut off from any support. I'd say, and I talk about it in the book, after the first video, they were telling me, hey, be quiet, apologize, we'll move you to Quantico, we'll hide you in a cubicle, and we'll see what happens. And so they was kind of like, wait and see, apologize, pretend you have PTSD, and we'll take care of you. And I just couldn't live my life like that. But once I made the second video and it started escalating, then it was every you know, same thing. All these military commanders that I've had the last 17 years, it was too risky to engage with me, even on a human level. Like, hey, Stu, you're going through a divorce. You just got out of prison. You got fired. How are you doing as a human? Like, none of them had the courage to even reach out to me and do that. And so it was really disappointing.
Author of the Week, Stuart Scheller, the book Crisis of Command, How We Lost Trust and Confidence in America's Generals and Politicians, our ABC Books Author of the Week. Thank you. I really appreciate you being with us. Very insightful stuff.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed.